Welcome to Just the Dis. My name is Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays. Joining me for our monthly chat about new arrivals, Mr. Rob Galuzzo. Hello, sir.
Hello. Hey, wait. What's a Blu-ray? I have this thing called Disney Plus now. And that on top of Hulu and Amazon Prime and Netflix and Movies Anywhere. Blu-ray?
I will admit that Disney Plus is pretty killer so far in my experience. So
Yeah.
I'm not going to make it into a podcast or anything, but nonetheless.
Not yet.
Yes. But anyway, so we have our stacks of Blu-rays.
We do.
And I am very curious. I happen to actually know what one of Rob's picks is. And
yes.
I'm very excited for him to talk about it. But
because I needed more time before we recorded to clarify some facts, so I told you what it was.
Okay, well, let's get into that. I want to talk about that one if you can.
It's going to be my second. Listen,
oh, your
Brian,
second
I've
pick.
Got,
okay.
Yes, I've got a whole theme here. I want to go.
I don't want to mess up your deal here, so let's start at the top.
I'll put it to you this way. I'm thinking thematically, I'm going to end with Christmas movies.
Oh, classy.
This is December, but I want to start in November because we normally record and we watch stuff the month before. November 5th just passed. Remember the 5th of November? I'm talking about V for Vendetta. That's my first pick.
Very cool.
Because while the truncheon may be used in lieu of conversation, words will always retain their power. Words offer the means to meaning, and for those who will listen, the enunciation of truth. And the truth is, there is something terribly wrong with this country, isn't there?
You designed it, sir. You wanted it foolproof. You taught me every television in London.
Cruelty and injustice, intolerance and oppression. And where once you had the freedom to object, to think and speak as you saw fit, you now have sensors and systems of surveillance coercing your conformity and selecting your submission.
We need cameras.
How did this happen? Who's to blame? Well, certainly there are those who are more responsible than others, and they will be held accountable. But again, truth be told, if you're looking for the guilty, you need only look into a mirror.
And you know what? I got to be honest with you. I haven't seen this movie in a really, really long time. But what really sprung it, it's just been in my mind a lot, because when I was in France over the summer, there was I went with my fiance Alyssa to a kind of like a, I guess you'd call it like a nerd bar. The name of it translates to Last Bar in the End of the World or something along those lines. But when you walk in, there is this great glass case, kind of like a fire axe. And it was filled with Guy Fawkes masks, and it said "Break in case of revolution."
Nice.
So I took that photo. I was like, "Oh man, I got to save this for November 5th," and I almost freaking forgot. So thankfully that morning, I remembered to post the photo. But also, side note, I've been really, really enjoying HBO's Watchmen, which is another Alan Moore property. And so every once in a while, you know, it's funny because Alan Moore is a crazy genius in his own right. He's, for people that don't know, he's an incredible writer, in particular a comic book writer who redefined that medium several times over the years. He's sworn off Hollywood. He doesn't even get credits in things he created like Watchmen, which I don't know. I think he's being a little overdramatic, but that's just me. You know, it's his prerogative. I think Watchmen is excellent. It's actually a sequel to his comics, that show. And I don't know, it put me in that Alan Moore frame of mind, and I had not seen V for Vendetta in a really long time, probably not since the DVD release. I broke out the Blu-ray on November 5th. It's written and produced by the Wachowskis, so it's the creators of The Matrix, if you will. And it was directed by James McTeague. And it stars Natalie Portman, and Hugo Weaving is behind the mask as V. Although it was originally, they ended up recasting it. God, who was the original guy? It was the guy that was on The Following, James Purfoy. Yeah, and apparently there's some shots of him in it still. I mean, you can't tell because it's obviously somebody in a mask. But yeah, James Purfoy was originally cast as V. And I don't know, I guess there were quote-unquote creative differences, and he left. And then Hugo Weaving is just such a terrific actor in general. And he steals the show. So this is basically, it takes place in a slightly altered version of our, I mean, it's technically present day, but it feels like an alternate timeline where if Nick, I think it's if Nixon was still in power, like how that would have shaped the world, which is a common theme for all of Alan Moore's stuff. Watchmen's the same thing. And basically there is a guy in a Guy Fawkes mask that is causing a little bit of anarchy because the way that the UK is running the world, it's kind of, I mean, it's pretty, it was amazing to me how timely this was now as opposed to when it initially came out in the early 2000s. It's really, really good, man. And I don't want to say much more than that. I think you should just watch the movie. And it's also got, just that style that was fire behind me. That style, it's action, and maybe it's V causing a fire, but it's that post-Matrix world where some of the action is slowed down. But really, what caught me off guard this time is just how brilliantly written this script is. And the Wachowskis did a great job adapting the original graphic novel. I mean, when V introduces himself, it is literally like a 2-minute introduction, and every single word is a word that starts with V. I just didn't know that V had that many words, let alone that you could continually flow. So it's just incredible. Natalie Portman's great in it too. And again, when anything's adapted from a comic book, I get really excited, especially about the special features. So there's tons of stuff on here. There's a whole special on Guy Fawkes called Remember, Remember. There's stuff about how the comic book V for Vendetta like kind of changed comic books. Tons of stuff on the making of. There's a Saturday Night Live digital short from when Natalie Portman hosted, theatrical trailer. And there's something called the Director's Notebook, which I guess is an in-movie experience, which I don't remember them doing this much for Blu-rays, but I thought it was a big deal with DVD, where they'd kind of give you the, wasn't it like New Line that had like that, like in a film?
Yeah, Infinifilm, whatever. Yeah, Infinifilm, yeah. Maybe? I don't know if I'm remembering.
Yeah,
that
where stuff would like pop up throughout the movie. So there's a version of that on here as well.
Cool.
But yeah, it's a really cool movie, and now it will be my tradition every November 5th because it's great.
That's kind of awesome. Yeah, no, I was a big fan of this one when it came out, and now I feel like it's not being talked about as much, and that's too bad because it is definitely one of their better films for sure. And now you've got me inspired to want to rewatch. So
yeah, it is ripe for rediscovering. And again, with everything that's going on politically right now, it just seems so perfect. You know, so yeah, I recommend it again.
Cool. All right. Well, I am going to go comedy to start. This one is from Warner Archive, and it is My Favorite Year. And so this is a really fun, touching comedy that actor Richard Benjamin directed. And it stars Marklyn Baker from Perfect Strangers and Peter O'Toole. But the supporting cast is also great. It has Jessica Harper, who we love, Suspiria, Phantom of the Paradise, etc., Joe Bologna, and there's definitely a bunch of other faces that I know from other films. But the gist of the story is that it's set in, I believe, 1954. This movie came out in 82, by the way. But it's set in 1954 in New York City, and Marklyn Baker plays a kid who works in the writer's room for a live television show. I think it's called Comedy Cavalcade, and I guess you would say it's kind of like an SNL kind of thing. And he is low level in terms of his writing, you know, what he's allowed to get into the show or not. But he loves this actor named Alan Swan. And Alan Swan is played by Peter O'Toole. He's very much an Errol Flynn type, who's like the sort of tail end of his career and has just become kind of a joke as like a notorious drunk who's always late. And so they hire Alan Swan to come on this comedy cavalcade, and it looks like he's going to be a big trash fire to deal with. Like, he shows up and he's drunk. He passes out on the writer's room table, and Joe Bologna, who plays like the like main comic dude on the show, is like, I want him out.
At least we've got plenty of time to replace him.
Dump him!
Leo, isn't there some way? I mean, the man is a legend.
Stan, what do you think?
I don't know. He is a legend.
One of the biggest stars ever. He's one of a kind. A guy like this is irreplaceable. Replace him, Leo.
You can't.
Too risky. He's out.
King! You're right. This is too risky. You can't take a chance with something like this. Look, King, you're a big star now, and I'm sure you always will be. But suppose, just suppose, and I know this is never going to happen, but suppose someday you wind up like this. I hope nobody does to you what you're doing to him.
Dump him. Who are you to talk to me like that, you little Jiminy Cricket pest bastard? All right, he gets one more chance.
No!
Yes!
Yes!
Hey, but now you're going to be responsible for him. Swan better be at every rehearsal sober, or it's your ass, you understand? Now, see, Si, this kid's got balls.
A week's salary, Swan takes a die.
And so then Marklin Baker starts, like, hanging out with this hero of his, and O'Toole is just fantastic as this character. Like, he's just perfect. Mm. So it's just a fun sort of couple days in the life kind of scenario, and it's a really sweet movie, and I don't want to say too much more than that because I really think it's to be enjoyed, but it is definitely one of Peter O'Toole's best performances, and Marklin Baker's, like, to me, way better than he was in Perfect Strangers, and I like him a lot in Perfect Strangers.
Me too.
You know, but it's just a really well-written movie, and it's got a really great sense of nostalgia for that period of television, but it's sort of, you know, speaking to the industry itself. It's nostalgic for old Hollywood in this really neat way, and I don't know. I just really love this movie, and this rewatch, I mean, the Blu-ray looks great, of course. It cemented again for me, as a lot of these Warner Archives, specifically Blu-rays lately, I've been running across where I was like, oh, I like that movie. And then I watch it and I'm like, oh, I love that movie. So that was definitely the case with this. It has a feature length commentary from director Richard Benjamin, which is cool.
And one of the people was O'Toole, and he said, well, send me the script. And so I sent him the script over to the hotel, and he had read the script, and I went to the hotel, and I thought to myself as I'm walking down the hall to his suite here, if this guy says yes, I'm going to be directing a movie. And I had a lovely chat with him, and he said, well, I've read the script. He said, I've read everything except the last 10 pages. So I have to be very professional about this. I want to tell you that I like it. I'm inclined to do it. I don't want to say yes until I read these last 10 pages. So I said, okay. So at least I had I thought, you know, there's a chance here that I'll actually get to direct this movie. And the next day, I called him, and he said, well, I've read the last 10 pages. He said, do you have it in front of you? So I said, yes. He said, open to the last page. And in the original movie, there was a scene in a cemetery. He had died, and Mark went to the cemetery every year on his birthday and poured a bottle of cognac onto the gravestone. And he said, you have dates on the gravestone. So I said, yes. And he said, well, there's a birth date and a death date. I said, yes. And he said, do you know my birthday? And I said, no, I have no idea. He said, so no, the writer, Norman Steinberg, no one knew who was going to play this part or anything. And I said, no, we didn't. Norman picked these dates out of the air. He said, well, that's my birthday. And I said, what? And he said, and if you add it up, that's the age I am right now. And he said, therefore, I have to do this film. Because he believed in omens like that. So that, I mean, that was our first little miracle in terms of this picture.
Monologue's in.
That's ported over from the DVD. But between that and just getting a nice transfer from this one, I think this is a must. I think this is definitely something people should pick up. Really wonderful film. My favorite year.
Wow. And you know, I'm looking it up while we're talking about it. And Richard Benjamin, the director, I know him as an actor. I had no idea he was a director, and let alone directed this feature on top of several other kind of wacky movies.
The Money Pit,
yeah,
among others. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Yeah, he definitely went into directing a little later in his career, but I love him as an actor too. He's fantastic. He's in a ton of great films. But I got to say, this is maybe one of the best things he ever touched. Wow. It's just such a really wonderful film. So highly recommended.
Cool. From one classic to another, the title you wanted me to talk about, which is Arrow's brand new release, double disc in a limited edition box with a booklet for RoboCop.
RoboCop. Who is he? What is he? Where does he come from? He is OCP's newest soldier in their revolutionary crime management program. OCP spokesmen claim that the fearless machine has crooks on the run in old Detroit. Today, kids at Lee Iacocca Elementary School got to meet in person what their parents only read about in comic books.
Robo, excuse me, Robo, any special message for all the kids watching at home?
Ow! Stay out of trouble.
Outstanding.
Oh, man. RoboCop, baby. What can be said about this film? It's a goddamn masterpiece. It's satirical. It's violent. It's one of a kind. It's science fiction. It's everything I love about movies. And it's one of those movies I saw way too young. Paul Verhoeven directs. Peter Weller plays RoboCop. And much like An American Werewolf in London, I've owned this movie a lot. I had the DVD. I had the Criterion DVD. And I have now since bought it on Blu-ray at least three times. I know there was a post Criterion Blu-ray of it. Not Criterion, but like a regular, I think, you know,
the MGM or something.
MGM version of it. Then they restored it a little bit, or they did a new scan of it, so I had to buy that version. Then it came with the other three. Anyway, it's just one of those films. And so yet again, when Arrow announced it, I wasn't as excited about it because, again, I'm like, do I really need RoboCop again? You know, and the other thing is the versions that have been put out don't look bad and by any means. They don't seem like they need giant restorations. So if you are a fan of the movie, then yes, I think you do need this Arrow version for several reasons. The biggest reason for me, actually, believe it or not, is incorporating the theatrical cut, which we actually haven't seen on disc for many, many, many years, pretty much since the Criterion version came out. The Criterion one was the quote-unquote X-rated cut with all the gore kind of put back in. There's a lot of violence, you know, in particular, the stories about slightly in the future Detroit. Alex Murphy's a new cop in Detroit and pretty much almost immediately gets killed by a ridiculous gang of some of the most over-the-top colorful characters ever. He's immediately signed up for a program where he's kind of brought back as a cyborg, but he doesn't know who he is. And he very violently takes care of criminals in a very cathartic, cheer-inducing way, as I remember when I saw this as a kid in theaters. But the really interesting thing is, because since that Criterion, it's always been this director's cut, which is, to me, it's interesting because the gore is so over the top and so excessive, and it goes on for so long that you kind of just laugh. Like, you just can't take it seriously. And not too long ago, I went and saw the theatrical cut play at the New Beverly on film. And obviously, the theatrical is the R-rated cut. And by truncating all those scenes, I thought it was actually worse. Like, it was far more effective and disturbing, kind of seeing the violence, like, not fully, only partially shown on screen. Huh. Yeah, because, again, it's like you're seeing a guy explode with, like, literally 100 squibs. By the 50th squib, you're laughing because you're like, this is ridiculous. But when they cut it a little before that, it's stark real life violence. And so the theatrical cut actually kind of disturbs me a bit. And so this is the first time that it's been available on Blu-ray, fully restored. It's on the second disc. Now, the goods are whole ton of new special features as usual, as you could expect. They've ported over the commentary from, I think it's from the 2014 edition. And there's a whole bunch of new stuff. The Future of Law Enforcement, which is a new interview with the co-writer Michael Miner. RoboTalk, which is probably my favorite thing on here. It's a roundtable conversation with the co-writer Ed Neumeier and filmmakers David Burke, who is the writer of Elle, another Paul Verhoeven film. And it's moderated by Nicholas McCarthy, who's the director of The Prodigy, which came from Orion Films Pictures most recently. So it's kind of like three different guards of – they all have an Orion or Verhoeven connection. And it's just some really candid, cool stuff. The one thing that they revealed in that chat, Ed Neumeier, the writer – It's famous that Paul Verhoeven did not want to do this movie. He looked at the title. Nobody wanted to do it. They saw the title and they didn't understand it. He read a few pages of the script and like tossed it aside. And what happened was his wife picked it up and started reading it and reconvinced Paul Verhoeven to look at it again. She's like, this is actually really good. And I think you could actually do a really good job with this. And so he didn't get it, but he met with the writer. And to me, I'd never heard this before until this roundtable. The writer said he didn't get it, but what I gave him comic books. And he left with a bunch of Iron Man and Dredd comic books, as in Judge Dredd. And he apparently came back after having read Judge Dredd with a Judge Dredd t-shirt. And he's like, I get it. I know how to do this. And I'm like, oh. But I never drew the comparison that RoboCop, at least satirically and the comedy of it, is totally the Judge Dredd comic books. So I thought that was a fun little revelation here. Like, oh, that's kind of interesting that's the comic that made Paul Verhoeven understand how to do this.
That's super cool and totally makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So there's that. I mean, there's tons of stuff. There's new interview with Nancy Allen. There's a casting segment with Julie Seltzer, who did the ensemble casting of this. There's a really cool segment called, let me see, Robo Props. And it's actually this guy in France. It's like 12 minutes long. It's this guy in France who has collected, he started years ago. He has like the largest collection of actual RoboCop like props and merch and stuff like that in the world. And I don't know, sometimes that's like a cool special feature that I like seeing, is shining a light on the fandom. But this is literally a guy that's preserving the original suit from part one and like a subway poster from France and one of the guns from part two and all this crazy stuff. So that's kind of fun to watch. There's a whole segment on the score. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. And then on the second disc, what I think is really cool, on top of the theatrical version, and they did this with Weird Science, they actually have the TV cut on here.
Oh, I love that
stuff. It's an SD, but you can watch the TV version, which obviously is completely redubbed, you know, all of just a lot of graphic violence and curses. And so you get to see the version of the curses, like how they changed the dialogue. and even cooler, there's a couple of split screen comparisons. So there's a split screen featurette that shows the director's cut and the theatrical cut, and then another one that's the theatrical cut and the edited for TV version. So I mean, again, there's like such a plethora of incredible material here to play with. Just to be sure though, because usually when I upgrade I get rid of my old disc, I went back to the last release of RoboCop, which was the unrated director's cut from MGM, and this came out around the time of the remake. So this is going back a few years, and it's got the newest thing on the last release was a Q&A with the filmmakers, like a live Q&A. That's ported over here as well on Arrow. However, and this is the bad news, my fellow collectors, there is one featurette that dates way back to the DVD, the post-Criterion DVD, called Flesh and Steel, The Making of RoboCop, and it's not on the Arrow release.
Damn it.
It's a 36-minute featurette. And again, it's SD, it's a lot older, but I'm a completist, and I like having everything. And on top of that, the last disc also has two very short featurettes from 1987. And I love that stuff too. I love the actual on set at the time featurettes. So those, as much new stuff and as much as they've collected in this set, which is incredible, I'm not going to be able to part with my last disc because there's a few featurettes that didn't make it over. So I still give this Arrow release my strongest possible recommendation, with the caveat that you hold on to the previous RoboCop release so that you have everything there is to do with the RoboCop in one shot.
Crazy. Well, I'm glad you pointed that out. I always like to know that stuff.
And dear listeners, I delayed this recording by a half hour to confirm this information because that's how much I care about you.
Oh, dude. Well, that's the kind of detail that I am proud to have you on the show to verify. That's fucking fantastic. So thank you for doing that. Well, okay. So I'm going to go for another comedy here. We're going to go from your incredibly epic disc with all these features to the one I'm going to talk about, which has none. But it is a very funny comedy. This is one of these that I kind of dug out because I hadn't watched it in a while. And I just wanted to pull it into the show. I was looking for something to fill a slot, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to talk about Dirty Work.
Oh, my God. I love Dirty Work.
You fellas have a lot of growing up to do, I'll tell you that. Ridiculous. Completely ridiculous. Can you believe these characters? Way out of line. Way out of line. I have a good mind to go to the warden about this. You know what hurts the most is the lack of respect. You know? That's what hurts the most. Except for the other thing, that hurts the most, but the lack of respect hurts the second most.
Weaver, McKenna, you're free to go.
Ridiculous.
Yes, I figured you were a fan. I feel like we may have even talked about it. Not on the show, I don't think, but at some point. But yeah, so this is from, I believe, 98, I want to say. Yeah, 98. Norm MacDonald, one of the great comedies of the 1990s. For me, probably the best, well, one of the best SNL spin-off type things, if you want to call it that. It's not a specific SNL character, but it was around the time when Norm was hot from SNL. But the gist of the movie, for those that don't know, is that Norm plays sort of a pathetic dude who's unemployed and recently dumped. And he and his buddy, played by Artie Lang, start their own revenge for hire business to raise some money to help Artie Lang's dad get a heart transplant. And Artie Lang's dad, of course, is played by Jack Warden, and he's fucking hilarious in this movie. But it is just full of great, like, Norm MacDonald-isms. Like, I don't know, I respond to a different scene every time because there's so much quotable stuff in this movie. It's like,
yeah,
every scene has something. But this time it was like the scene where he meets the girl for the first time. I forget the actress's name.
Trailer Howard. She plays the character Kathy.
Yes. Meets her and she asks him to come with her somewhere. And he's like,
so, would you like to come in for some coffee?
Oh, no, no. I have to go, lift weights. What?
And just the way that he says what, like he doesn't even understand why he just said that, is just such a great moment. And he plays it perfect. Like, my line reading there was terrible, but the way Norm MacDonald does it is fantastic. And there's just tons of that stuff. And then you go into like a whole bit where one of the characters works at a movie theater and Don Rickles is like the manager of the movie theater.
Oh, man. It's,
that stuff is priceless. Oh, man. So good. But anyway, it's legit one of my favorite comedies, and it's an Olive Films Blu-ray. Unfortunately, you know, no extra features. I would love to see this one as part of the signature collection, but I just have this feeling it's not going to happen. So, you know, maybe Kino will pick it up. This disc is now a few years old, so it could be at a point where the license could be up and maybe Kino will put it out with a commentary or something like that. I don't know. I'll pick that up in a heartbeat, but I had to have this movie on Blu-ray. I also own it digitally because I like it that much that I'm just like, I need to have access to Dirty Work. But yeah, just great, great comedy and full of incredibly ridiculous scenes, including one involving prison rape and another involving like an incredible, horrible drug dealer shootout that all happens off screen. And it's just brilliant. Anyway,
Chevy Chase is the doctor.
Oh God, yes. See, I'm forgetting about. There's just, this movie's jam packed with stuff. And then Chris Farley as a guy who got his nose bit off by a whore at some point, and he's hilarious. Anyway,
yes, a Saigon whore.
Saigon whore.
Is
yes.
How he puts it.
Exactly. So anyway, I just want to.
No, and actually, you reminded me of my favorite. Like, one of my favorite Chris Farley bits is, doesn't he try to play like Street Fighting Man by like the Rolling Stones and he hits the wrong track?
Yes.
Or so, like, yeah, he's like, Street Fighting Man, Rolling Stones, yes! And then like it's not that at all. Damn it!
Yes. Dude, every scene is gold for me in this movie. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
I just wanted to bring in an old classic. That's one thing I don't do enough of on the show. And you inspired me. I feel like you've done that on a couple shows recently. And I was like, you know what? I need to go dig out something older. It doesn't have to be brand new. I just want to talk about Dirty Work, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, I have to revisit this. And, you know, it's like, I loved Artie Lang. I remember when he was on Howard Stern back when I was in New York. And it's just kind of been sad, like, how turbulent and just terrible of a life he's had in the last couple of years. I'm hoping he pulls himself together. I just saw him do an appearance on the Joe Rogan show, and he seemed and looked a lot better.
Okay.
I mean, he completely collapsed his nose from excessive drug use, which is just a little disturbing when you see photos of him.
Yikes.
But the point being, Dirty Work like captures just, I don't want to say him in his prime, because he was always very, very funny. But it's Artie at his best in this movie.
Yeah, he's a great sidekick to Norm, and they are wonderful together. And that's part of the reason the movie works so well. So very good stuff.
Amen. Love that one. Great pick. Well, I'm going to go horror now because because these movies are ridiculous, and I didn't get a chance to talk about them on Shockwaves. And I want to give a little love to Severn Films. They get plenty of love on the other show, but not this one. So this is a very specific version of this release. So you need to get the 2-disc version of Killer Crocodile, which comes with Killer Crocodile 2.
You're going to hunt it down and kill it, aren't you?
Sure, we're gonna kill it, aren't we, Joe?
You bet, Judge. Consider it already dead.
No.
No what?
We're against killing of any kind. Our work here is important. Someone's polluting these swamps, and it's our job to find out who.
I'm not surprised. Take a look at this. The dyes reveal high acid levels caused by industrial waste.
You still think the crocodile should be saved?
If I get the chance, I won't hesitate to kill it.
It takes a special breed to make it in there.
And if you don't, there's a single disc version, but I checked before we recorded. I checked both on Amazon. It's just the slightly expensive one that has the slipcase. It comes with both movies. And it's still available on their website, severn-films.com. I had never heard of these.
Me neither,
by
the way.
I've never seen these. They came out in September. They are obviously Italian knockoff movies that have a giant crocodile in them. And both of them are very much ripoffs of Jaws and Jaws 2. And in fact, the reason I picked this one today is because I just watched 2 this morning. Like, part 1 is pretty wacky. Like, within the first few minutes, and again, this is, you can make the whole argument for CG and all this other stuff. What works about Jaws so well is that the thing didn't work, so when you do see it, it's really scary as hell. But what's amazing to me here is that this thing doesn't look real at all, but when you do see it, there's something amazing about a giant freaking rubber crocodile chopping down on people. And this is an Italian movie, so they go for the blood, they kill kids. There's no stone unturned when it comes to what they're doing here. But it is definitely a Italian Jaws ripoff with a giant crocodile. I can't even tell you a plot. It's just, that's all you need to know. And Josh, my friend Josh Miller told me 2's not as good. I beg to differ. I thought 2 was actually thoroughly entertaining, and they kind of upped the ante in the same way that Jaws 2 is upped the ante. A lot of crocodile chewing heads off and things of that sort. And some explosive endings, the way they dispose of these things. Just go on YouTube and look up Severn Films page and watch the trailer to this thing. And then again, I feel like, don't just get the single disc with the first one. You need the complete Killer Crocodile experience. You need both films. So go for the 2-disc version of this thing. They're both ridiculous. And they came out 89, 90 back to back. So it was even late in the Jaws ripoff phase. Like, this would be ripping off Jaws the Revenge, basically, I think. But what the hell? You know, the Italians, late to the party, but they're always bringing the party. So that's what I say. Killer Crocodile 1 and 2 from Severn Films.
I got to get it. It's ridiculous I didn't get this because I love animal attacks movies so much. So I'm just kind of like feeling a little stupid for not having grabbed it already.
Still available.
Yeah.
And it's a fun time. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah. it's definitely a must for me, and I'm going to get it for sure. I don't know why I was, I think I've gotten a little bit wary of some animal attacks movies because there are certainly a few I've come across that are terrible. And I'm not saying these look terrible, but I think I've been stung a few times with blind buys on animal attacks movies where I was like, oh, that doesn't deliver at all what I thought it would, but it sounds like these definitely deliver. So
it's always a gamble, but these deliver a good time.
Fantastic. I'm into it. Okay. All right. So I'm going to move over to a Kino disc now. This is a, I think, sort of a 70s classic from 1974. This is Thunderbolt and Lightfoot.
Which way are we headed?
We're good together.
You're 10 years too late.
You stick with me, kid. You're going to live forever.
Brought back some extra goodies.
Are you out of your mind?
Hang on!
Geronimo!
Now, do you want to talk or do you want to play games?
Why not do it again?
What's he mouthing off about now?
Montana Armor. We hit the same place the same way.
There it is.
That's it?
20mm cannon with armor-piercing shells. At exactly 10:30, Goody, you're going to drop Lightfoot off in the alley behind the Liberty Lounge. The window's already been fixed, so you can just climb right in there and change your clothes. At 11:30, you get in the telegraph office, and you got to get in there before 11:35, because that's when the alarm goes off. You just keep quiet, nobody gets hurt, understand?
Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, that sounds like something, doesn't it?
So this is a beauty, man. This movie, definitely a cult item. It's from director Michael Cimino, who would go on to do The Deer Hunter, and then, of course, Heaven's Gate. But this is a little before that stuff, and I think it's his best movie, in my opinion. You know, don't hurt me, fans of The Deer Hunter, which I like. I just think this has got too much stuff that I personally love in it. I mean, first of all, you have Clint Eastwood and Jeff Bridges as sort of buddies. You know, basically, Eastwood is like a bank robber who runs into this kid played by Jeff Bridges that he gets to help him organize a new heist. And the cast is just so ridiculous. It, you know, you've got Gary Busey, George Kennedy, Catherine Bach, Jeffrey Lewis. I mean, it's there's just tons of Bill McKinney, Vic Tayback, Dub Taylor. You know, it's just so deep in terms of all the character actors that they trot out for this movie. Who wrote the script? I'm trying to remember. Oh, Cimino wrote it. I forgot.
Wow.
It's just got a really fun, irreverent sense of goofiness, but it still has a little bit of that, I don't know, like a touch of Easy Rider to it, you know? I mean, in the way that Jeff Bridges is sort of bringing that into it. You know, Clint Eastwood's a little bit, like, older, and Jeff Bridges is, like, they aren't like oil and water, but they definitely have some things where they don't totally align, and there's a great sort of, not tension, but the way they play off each other is just wonderful. So, I don't know, I'm just a huge fan of Jeff Bridges in the 70s. I think he did some incredible work in the 70s, from Fat City to Last American Hero to Winter Kills, which I'm going to talk about at some point on the show. That's really fun.
Yeah.
Also from Kino. But anyway, this one has come out from Twilight Time, but Kino has done their own new commentary track. So if I believe the old disc has a commentary from Nick and Julie and Lem Dobbs, but I'm going to have to go double check that. But this one has a new commentary from Nick Pinkerton, who's one of my favorites in the Kino stable, and he's great, and he does a wonderful job. And then there's something called For the Love of Characters, and it's a new interview with Michael Cimino, and that's also good. Or I don't know if it's new now, actually, you think about it. No, it's maybe not. I think that might have been ported over. But it's still good, and it looks great. You know, this is not, I don't think this is a new transfer from the old Twilight Time disc, so you're not necessarily getting a new transfer, but it does look really good, and I believe that disc is out of print, so this is a must-own. You need to have Thunderbolt and Lightfoot in your collection. It's one of those 70s movies that you watch and go, okay, I see why this has a following. It's just got a quirkiness to it, and it's not like too many films that Eastwood did. I mean, I guess you could align it with something like Every Which Way But Loose, Any Which Way You Can kind of thing, but it's a little darker than that. It's R-rated, and So I don't know. It's just it's a good sweet spot for Clint Eastwood and Jeff Bridges and the whole rest of the cast. So I'm just a big fan of this one. Really excited that Kino brought it back out. Thunderbolt and Lightfoot.
Cool. Yeah, I definitely have to check that out. Yeah, so my last two picks, I've got two more picks, and then I've got a runner-up or just a notable mention at the end. But it's December. We've been doing this for this marks a full year of
Shit, yes.
Technically, January will be our 1 year of doing new arrivals. I mean, we did podcasts before this. But I want to get in the holiday spirit. There's plenty of things you can watch, especially if you have Disney Plus now. But on the disc front, I know you've talked about this. It's a Kino Lorber release. It is one of my favorite discoveries of the last 5 years or so. This was double paired with Die Hard for 2 years in a row at the New Beverly.
Oh,
and
yes.
That is The Silent Partner.
Nice.
All of it. That's all there is. Look, I saw him make the deposit. Give me the money, you fucker.
So this is stars Elliot Gould and Christopher Plummer and Suzanne York, and it's set around Christmas time because Elliot Gould is kind of like this mild-mannered bank teller. I think it's set in Canada, and he kind of by accident stumbles on this plot that the mall Santa Claus, played by Christopher Plummer, is intending to rob his bank. he finds like the first draft of his notice that he wants to give. And so he just kind of takes this knowledge, uses this knowledge to his advantage to kind of steal from the bank himself. And it's such a great suspenseful cat and mouse style movie because you know, you don't know what you're getting with Christopher Plummer other than a guy in a Santa suit, but he turns out to be quite the psychopath. So this is kind of amazing. It's more a thriller and a drama, and it has like a noir quality to it. Elliot Gould at this time is just like on fire. Like I just love all his
so
movies
much
from
fire.
This time. But really, then there's like one graphic murder that's like straight
so
out
graphic.
Of an Argento, like it's right out of an Argento movie, and you're
totally.
Like, whoa. So this was like it's just a wonderful surprise, a great thriller, a great Christmas movie, it's just everything all in one. And Kino Lorber put this out on disc. It seemed like there was no, I think there was a DVD of it with a really, really, really terrible cover art that
yep.
would never let you believe that this movie was as big a gem as it is. This has the original poster art on the front, and it's got a brand new interview with Elliot Gould. So it is worth it alone just to hear him talk about this movie and kind of give context to where he was in his life when he made it. So that's great to have on here. And then there's an audio commentary with film historians Howard Berger, Steve Mitchell, and Nathan L. Thomas, and then a radio spot and a theatrical trailer. It's kind of what you'd come to expect from Kino's special features. They don't overdo it unless it's something like Hannibal, but they give you a little something. But really the draw here is the movie itself. And I don't know with this whole Fox merger deal, I don't know if people are going to be allowed to show Die Hard this year.
Yeah,
so,
it's hard to tell.
I'm hoping the new Bev will pull it off and do this again, this double bill. And if not,
I think
I'm going to do the double bill at home on Blu-ray of Die Hard and The Silent Partner.
Yeah, I mean, for those that don't have access to the new Bev, if they are able to do it, which they might be. I think there's some qualification the new Bev has, which is that they don't run...
They're a retro theater. Yeah, they don't run
first
run.
They don't run first run Disney movies because they've been running a ton of Disney catalog. Although I'm trying to remember if they've done a ton of Fox catalog recently. I feel like they have a few, but maybe not. Anyway, if you don't have access, definitely do this double feature on your own at home. It's really great. Like, we were all there at the Bev seeing last year. Yeah. And it was great. It was just a really perfect double bill. And not that I would have thought those two films would necessarily go together, but somehow they were excellent. And it was just great with the crowd. But yeah, pick up this Silent Partner disc. I can't recommend it enough. I may put it on my best of list at the end of the year. You know, like
yeah.
It's that in terms of how good the movie is. And I do love that Elliot Gould interview too. So it's partially that as well. But yeah, the movie's just fantastic. I'm so glad to hear you say it's one of your favorite discoveries in the last 5 years because it's that good a movie.
Yeah, I mean, even when the new Bev first showed it, I just remember like half the audience left after Die Hard and I was like, I've got nothing else to do. I've never even heard of this movie. Let's go. And yeah. I was like, I was so glad I stayed because it was so, so good.
Yeah, what a great surprise. It's definitely that kind of movie, you know? Yeah. Well, good stuff. I'm totally on board with that. My next pick is from Arrow Academy, and they are having a killer year. This is The Man of a Thousand Faces from 1957.
Yes, Lon Chaney was all of these. The Hunchback of Notre Dame, the Miracle Man, the Phantom of the Opera. The world, fascinated and thrilled, called him the Man of a Thousand Faces. But what was the secret Lon Chaney hid behind his thousand faces? What was the mystery in his life? Now, for the first time, the true story, torn from his heart, comes to the screen. Starring James Cagney, magnificent as the fabulous Lon Chaney, master of the grotesque, the weird, the strange. And Academy Award-winning Dorothy Malone and lovely Jane Greer as the two women who made his life more astounding, more touching than any of his unforgettable roles.
I'll come to see you every week. Every week. I promise you.
You had me fired. Damn you! Damn you! Damn you!
Who are you?
I'm from the collection agency. I've come to collect my wife.
And this is a first-time watch for me. I'd heard of the film, but for those that don't know, this is the Lon Chaney biopic, basically. And James Cagney plays Lon Chaney, and it's a really interesting movie. It opens with, timely enough, it opens with Robert Evans, who plays Irving Thalberg in the movie, walking out on stage in front of a crowd and sort of introducing the story that's set up in this really kind of fun way where they have like a tribute to Lon Chaney kind of that becomes the story of the movie that we're watching. But yeah, then Robert Evans comes back later in the story as Irving Thalberg, and that's just kind of a nice touch. But Cagney, of course, is incredible in the movie. He's just so fantastic in the way that he, like Lon Chaney, apparently, you know, just was very physical in his performances. And I just, Lon Chaney's such a pioneer that you kind of forget that almost all of modern makeup that we now know and love sort of originates with him. I mean, he's maybe not necessarily the first person to do prosthetics, but he's definitely one of the first to like pioneer it and make it part of his act, part of his brand, if you will.
Well, yeah, and he did it on himself, which is kind of what all these younger guys like Rick Baker, when they were growing up, they were like, oh, I want to do it like Lon Chaney would do it on himself. I'm going to do it on myself. Yeah.
He's really inspirational in that sense. And the movie's not what I expected. It's very focused on the relationship between Chaney and his wife, who's played by Dorothy Malone. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, their son. And that's who would become Lon Chaney Jr. And so it's very much focused on that, you know, like the two of the wife and husband and the troubles they go through and their concerns about having a kid and then difficulties once the kid is born, kind of taking care of him. I won't go too far into it, but I will say it was like an emotional watch for me. It just really hit me in a different way than I thought it would. But it's a really inspirational story. And again, Cagney, one of his best performances I've seen. He's just outstanding. And Jim Backus, who was Mr. Howell on Gilligan's Island.
Yeah.
He's got a really great part in the movie as like a publicist who becomes a really good friend of the family to Lon Chaney and, you know, his wife and the kid and everything. And he sort of is a presence throughout, and he's just a really nice, like, he's a really solid character actor. And I think he, you know, a lesser actor in that part makes this movie not as good, and he definitely helps things. So so that was cool. But this is, of course, a special features laden disc. And it has a new audio commentary by film scholar Tim Lucas, which was fantastic. Not surprisingly, you know, I mean, Tim Lucas, man, I don't ever stop using him, people, you know, Arrow or Kino or whoever, more Tim Lucas commentaries. I just can't get enough. So this one was really packed with info and really informative and just a, I haven't seen him do a biopic like this. So it kind of is an avenue for more of what he does in this really cool way. Then there's The Man Behind a Thousand Faces, and that's a newly filmed look at Lon Chaney and his legacy by film critic Kim Newman. Yeah. So two of my favorite people in terms of special features on Blu-rays these days, especially genre movies, both on this disc. So highly, highly recommended. I mean, the movie itself is really solid, but then the commentary and that interview with Kim Newman take it up another level. So big kudos to Arrow Academy for bringing it on this one. And it's going to be a discovery for me. You know, it's a movie I hadn't seen. So this is the perfect way to see it if you haven't seen it for the first time.
Cool. Yeah, no, thanks for talking about that, because that has been, it's literally been on a pile that I've been meaning to watch for the last like week. And I keep almost putting it on and then just being like, I'm not quite in the mood for this right now.
I think you'll dig it, man.
Yeah, no, I've always wanted to see it. I've never seen it before. So this is actually a new view for me as well. So
cool.
Cool. All right. So my fifth pick, and final one for this one. I mean, look, I got to go 3D, right? At some point. So.
Yes.
and we want to keep it in the holidays. This is literally, this could be my favorite 3D holiday movie. I watch it every year. And this year, this is kind of cool. I have a friend named Jesse. What's up, Jesse? Who I met for the first time at the Salem Horror Film Fest. And he ended up bunking with me because I had an Airbnb. And we had a great time. And he's actually coming out to LA en route to New Zealand on Christmas Day. and he's going to come and crash. And I was like, hey, when you get here on Christmas Day, I'm going to go to the microwave. I'm going to heat up some White Castle burgers. And we're going to watch A Very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas.
Nice.
From Warner Brothers Pictures, this holiday season, experience Christmas like never before.
Merry Christmas!
I shot Santa Claus in the face. He's real, and I shot him in the face.
What the fuck?
I'm just gonna take a closer look.
Who are those guys?
Oh, shit!
Those kids put something in here.
Was it drugs? Was it semen?
It doesn't taste like semen.
That's awesome.
This is a series of comedies that I can't believe became a series. Like, it originated with Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. Is that the name of the first one?
Yeah.
Yes. Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle, which is a really surprisingly funny, like, you know, stoner comedy sort of thing. I really love that first one. And for a lot of us, it was the first time we were seeing John Cho and Cal Penn. And they've both gone on. I mean, you know, John Cho's career is like incredible. He's in the Star Trek movies. He's in everything. And then, you know, they kind of split apart. And then they did a sequel, which my memory is the sequel is just okay. It's mildly entertaining, but it's just okay. And then out of nowhere, a few years after that, they did this ridiculous Very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas, which on paper sounds silly. But I actually think it's the best of the three. It's the funniest of the three. It actually does utilize 3D to its fullest extent as, for humor's sake. It's one of my favorite 3D releases that I own. And basically it's very relatable. You know, these two guys were best friends in college and they smoked a lot of pot and ate a lot of burgers and, you know, the whole drill, had an adventure. They'd always cross paths with Neil Patrick Harris from Doogie Howser at the time.
And, I love the persona that he takes on in these movies, by the way.
Incredible. Because when the first one came out, he's kind of like this like douchey Hollywood womanizer. and at the time that the first movie came out, he was not exactly, he did not come out as gay. So they actually work that into this movie, Harold and Kumar 3D, where his real life partner pops into it. Yet we still get the NPH that his persona that he's created for these movies. So basically what happens is there, years have gone by, Harold is kind of, you know, has a very successful career. He's married to a beautiful woman. Her very, very intimidating father, played by Danny Trejo, and their whole family are coming out for Christmas. And he just wants to make a good impression. And he crosses paths with Kumar again, who he hasn't seen in a couple of years. And basically, trouble ensues almost immediately, where Kumar goes to light a bong up and a doobie up and immediately burns down their Christmas tree, which is very rare. And it sets them on this adventure. And Harold's new best friend is played by, what's his name? Tom Lennon, the comedian.
Oh, nice.
And he's got a little baby with him who may or may not accidentally snort coke during the course of this movie.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
It is. Have you seen this? This is amazing.
You know what? Now that you're describing it to me, I don't think I have.
Oh my God.
I think it's one of those that I was like, oh, I've seen all those, but I may have only seen the first two and not that one yet.
Do you have this in 3D? Because I might have to
get it in 3D if I don't.
Get it or you're coming over.
Oh, nice. Yes.
And this will be our December screening movie.
I'm into it.
It really, and the reason why is on top of all the humor and, Neil Patrick's character in this movie is the best of the three. It's like, he takes it to a whole other level. But it's got a lot of heart, which basically, that's all I want out of a Christmas movie, is make me feel really good about everything by the end of it and make me just want to celebrate and get in the spirit. And this movie does it in spades. It's really, really good. It's about, you know, hanging on to those friendships and really valuing them. So I can't recommend this enough, in particular the 3D version of A Very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas.
Very cool. That sounds awesome. No, I forgot that was a 3D movie and that it came out 3D Blu-ray. And I'm glad you brought it up because I've definitely been in the frame of mind to want to watch something like that. So good stuff.
Well, there's even an incredible gag early on where Harold asks his assistant to go buy him a great present for his dad, his father-in-law. And the assistant comes running in saying, I got you a 3D TV. And like when he points straight at you. So it's a 3D gag of him pointing at us, the audience. and Harold is just like, who are you pointing to? like he kind of like calls out the 3D guy. It's really great. There's even a clip. They smoke and get really high on, and I think there's something, their drinks get spiked and there's a claymation sequence.
Oh, I love
because
it.
Because they inadvertently turn into claymation while they're high.
Oh, that's great.
It's great. It's a great movie. It's so much fun.
That's killer, man. I'm into it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to move on to another. I didn't realize I did this, but I have back-to-back Arrow Academy discs. So
nice.
This one is a Western from 1954. This is The Far Country.
Starring James Stewart, who learned in bullets and blood that no man can live for himself alone. Ruth Roman, who knew men and how to use them. Corrine Calvet, wiser than her years, and Walter Brennan and John McIntyre in the epic saga of a far frontier excitingly photographed on location amid the scenic grandeur of Canada's northern mountains.
I'll take your guns and work out a fair trial for you. Take them.
Now hold on, Rube. Now there just isn't any reason for a man getting himself killed if he doesn't have to.
Now why don't you go back to the nice people before you get hurt?
Now, this is directed by Anthony Mann, part of a series of Westerns he did with James Stewart that are pretty fucking fantastic. And this was one where I'm in a position to go, I think I'd seen this, but there was so much I didn't remember that when I put it on, I was like, I have to see how this ends because I don't remember. But there's just such a great thing about Anthony Mann Westerns and the darkness and the characters that Jimmy Stewart plays in these movies. They're just so different than you're used to seeing him. And once you get used to seeing him like this, you're just kind of like, oh, I don't really, it's not like you don't want to watch the other one because that's great too, but like he's just, I don't know, he's got such depth with this. So this movie opens really great because it's set in 1896 and basically we're seeing the beginning of the gold rush, the Klondike gold rush. And so Jimmy Stewart pulls into town with some cattle and he meets Walter Brennan. So that's kind of cool because it makes me think of Rio Bravo. And obviously I love Rio Bravo, who's like there to, you know, help him get his cattle on a boat so they can take the cattle up to another town and get paid for them. But there's two dudes with him that were riding with. And you see Jimmy Stewart kind of giving them the evil eye. And he's like,
here are your guns.
All right, now you've been waiting for 500 miles. Go ahead and use them.
I'll live to see you hang.
And you're just like, what was that about? And that's what I love about these movies is like, you're just like, well, that was weird. Something went down with them and we don't even know what it was. And already Jimmy Stewart is like, you're not really sure, like, what was that? Like, is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? And then there's this whole other thing where the cows get taken to this other town and Stewart gets himself in trouble with the local lawman who's like kind of funny. He's actually, if you remember Cloak and Dagger, there's the old couple in Cloak and Dagger. He's the old man from that, but he's much younger in this movie. But so he plays this like hanging judge in this like smaller town, and he basically commandeers all of, well, he takes all of Jimmy Stewart's cattle as a fine for this thing that they disrupted, a hanging that he was doing. And so it just becomes this whole battle between him and this lawman. And then there's Gold Rush stuff. It just keeps expanding. You're like, oh, it's going to be this story. And then it moves from one location to another and it becomes something else. And so the conflicts are building and sort of changing throughout. And it's, like I said, it's dark, and Jimmy Stewart's character is not necessarily, like, he's not like a true blue red-blooded American type. He's much more of a shifty dude, and you kind of are aligned with him because you can see that he's got a sort of a moral code that he abides by. But it's a fascinating character and just a great movie. Like, when I got to the end of it, it's one of those where you're just like, well, that was a fucking great movie.
Wow.
So, yeah, Anthony Mann Westerns in general, I highly recommend the whole series of them with Jimmy Stewart, but this is definitely one of the better ones. This disc has also a bunch of extras. It's got two discs here, and one has the... It's got two presentations of the film, both in the original aspect ratio of 1.85:1 and 2.00:1. Now, this is interesting because I watched the 1.85:1, but there are parts where it looks like really grainy, like they pushed in on a 2.0 transfer, and it's not like too distracting, except it made me want to check out that 2.0 transfer and just see if it didn't look quite so blown up in that, but it looks good either way. But the first disc also has a new audio commentary by film scholar Adrian Martin. It's got something called American Frontiers, Anthony Mann at Universal, an all-new documentary with film historian Alan K. Rode, Western author C. Courtney Joyner, script supervisor Michael Preece, and critics Michael Schlesinger and Rob Word. That's really cool because that covers like a lot of these movies I'm talking about. Then there's Man of the West, a newly filmed appraisal of the Far Country and the Westerns of Anthony Mann by who else? Kim Newman. So fuck yeah, dude. It's the month of Kim Newman. And yeah, I love variety with a guy like that. And I've talked about this on the show before, hearing him talk about horror. Well, in the case of Man of a Thousand Faces, he's talking about more like classic stuff, but it's some horror stuff. And then this is a Western. So you just really get a sense of how well-rounded a cinephile and film critic he is. And he's just like this incredible nerdy dude that I just love to hear talk about stuff. So I'd love to hang out with him. I'd love to get a beer with him. But anyway, so I got a full dose of Kim Newman this month. And I highly recommend anybody that's interested do the same thing. So that's The Far Country from Arrow.
Cool. Yeah, I'm hoping to check that disc out during the December break.
Cool.
Which feels like the right time for Westerns.
Yes, I agree.
So we picked our five picks. I got one runner-up that I wanted to mention. In between time period that we did our last show and this one, we lost the great Robert Forster.
Yes,
and
sadly.
you guys, you and Elric, my co-host from Shockwaves, you guys did a great tribute on Pure Cinema doing the New Beverly Calendar, because a big chunk of November was celebrating his filmography. I met him a couple of times, but there was one in particular that I remember that was really surreal. I had just flown back into town from New York, and AJ Bowen, the actor from The House of the Devil, picked me up at the airport, and we immediately went straight to meet Tom Holland, the writer-director of Fright Night, for lunch. And it was at the Daily Grill when there was one on Ventura. It's not there anymore. But the three of us are having lunch there, And Robert Forster walks in with a friend. And apparently, I guess Tom and him worked together, maybe in TV or something like that. Because they knew each other. And so they got into this whole conversation. And he introduced us. And we're chit-chatting. And it was one of those, you know, I consider myself a humble person. I don't really leave the apartment much. But occasionally you go out and like the weirdest stuff happens. And it's like, you know, the dude from House of the Devil picked me up from the airport to go have lunch with the guy from, you know, that did Fright Night. And then, you know, Robert Forster from Jackie Brown walks in and starts talking to us. It's one of those Hollywood moments.
Nice.
But anyway, great actor. So much great stuff in his filmography. And so the movie I picked out, I may or may not have seen it at the New Bev. I don't know because we're recording this before. But I broke out the DVD, the Blu-ray from Blue Underground for Vigilante.
Excellent.
An asphalt jungle. An urban skyline of fear. Waiting. Watching. Destroying. We're not safe anymore to walk the streets. When every hour, 163 more people become victims of assault. You live at the mercy of the animals who inhabit the streets of every city. People who place little value on their lives, and even less on yours. You live in a country where 12 women are raped every minute, where 65 people are murdered each day. It's happening now. It's happening this minute. The police are powerless. The law is corrupt. And the courts turn them loose.
Figure that's the answer.
That's my judge and my jury.
There is only one alternative. It's time to take a stand. Because time is running out. You're not safe anymore. Their numbers are growing, and you must wage a war to eliminate the problem. Yourself. Vigilante.
And man, this is I've only seen it once or twice, but it's Robert Forster and Fred Williamson in a film directed by William Lustig, who did Maniac, Maniac Cop. And it's just one of those really like hard-hitting Death Wish style movies, but with Robert Forster. And it is just my memory of it is it's really damn good. I haven't seen it in a while. I just remember his performance was fantastic. And so I broke out the Blu-ray. I'm hoping I'll get to see it on the big screen this month, but if not, I have the Blu-ray here handy. And I just kind of, again, there's so many films in his filmography you could check out right now since he's no longer with us. But this is like for fans of this show that like these kind of gems, I feel like this is one, you know, again, if you want to see Robert Forster in his version of Death Wish direct from the director of Maniac, Vigilante is the way to go. So this is my bonus pick for the month.
Great bonus pick. Yeah, Elric and I ended up watching that one together, rewatching it for the Pure Cinema show. And yeah, if you guys are interested, definitely check out the calendar episode for November for Pure Cinema. It's all about Robert Forster. We basically treated it as our Robert Forster tribute episode. But obviously, yeah, it was Quentin's programming that we were observing the tribute through. But yeah, Vigilante was one of the highlights in terms of rewatches for me, because I just had forgotten about it and forgotten how good he and Fred Williamson are together. Like, they're just great.
Yeah.
And it's definitely, for me, top tier Lustig, one of his best films for sure.
Joe Spinell's in it too.
Joe Spinell's in it as a dirty lawyer, and he's fantastic. So highly recommended too. I'm with you on this one. Good pick. All right.
Cool.
So for my last pick, I've got one from Shout Select. And this is a really neat, long-time-coming cult movie release of The Harder They Come from 1972.
Jamaica's first feature is America's number one cult movie.
The harder they come, harder they fall, one and all.
Jimmy Cliff, an existential hero as good as anything James Dean or Brando portrayed in the 50s. Crawdaddy. Yeah. In the backyard of paradise, life and marijuana are cheap. More guts, wit, humor, and sheer exuberance than most movies you'll see in any one year. Vincent Canby, New York Times.
Keep on fighting for the things I want.
So this one features reggae legend Jimmy Cliff, and he's like an aspiring singer hoping to make sort of a name for himself. He sort of finds himself in like this down on his luck position, and then he sort of turns outlaw, and it's a really interesting story, music story, kind of outlaw music story, and I really, really like it a lot, and I love the soundtrack, and Millie DiCirico talked about it on our Pure Cinema Soundtracks episode. Definitely go and listen to that one, because the soundtrack is pretty incredible, and I have it on vinyl as well, but it's sort of a classic for the reasons of the Jimmy Cliff performance, the sort of outlaw story, and the soundtrack. All those things come together in this really neat way that make it just a real gem. This double disc set, actually triple, is really pretty epic. It's got a new 4K scan from the original 16mm negative. This is a 16mm film.
Oh, cool.
New audio commentary with author David Katz, who wrote a Jimmy Cliff unauthorized biography. One and All, The Phenomenon of Harder They Come, Hard Road to Travel, The Making of Harder They Come, vintage interviews with actor Jimmy Cliff, producer Arthur Gorson, and director Perry Henzel. And then A Harder They Come music video. That's on the first disc. On the second disc is the movie No Place Like Home, which is, I think it's another film by Perry Henzel.
I don't know what kind of man he is. He's a taxi driver. He seems, well, he's about 6 feet tall. Jeff, Olivia, let me have a couple of days. If I'm not back in New York, I'm letting you call the embassy. Okay, and I'm going to beat the bushes for me. It's a civilized country. I'll be fine.
You're writing about the end of the world.
Well, that sounds a little pretentious.
No? Could be a hit.
You think so?
Sure. Now, if you could write a book that showed that Babylon not going to win...
We're all part of Babylon. Everybody's dependent on it in some way.
You may be. Not me.
Like, this was, I think this was kind of a lost film, if I recall, this Perry Henzel movie from years and years ago. And so now they've kind of restored it from the original negative, and this new expanded edition of the documentary Perry Henzel, A Filmmaker's Odyssey, is also included on that second disc. So that in and of itself is like a special edition too. And then disc three features a bunch more featurettes, The Ghosts of Recording Past, Dynamic Studios Then and Now, From the Cutting Room Floor, The Restoration of No Place Like Home, Filming in the Gully, Anatomy of Three Scenes, and then a few more. So this is like a pretty epic special edition, collector's edition, Shout Select disc. One of them, I don't know that they've done too many three disc sets, but if ever a movie was interesting and important enough to get this treatment, I mean, this is like, this movie was on Criterion Laserdisc, to give you an idea of the company that it was in. It's that important and interesting a cult film. So hats off to Shout on this. And really, I haven't gotten even all the way through this. There's so much stuff. But I'm really excited that they are paying attention to the, you know, classic cult films of that period, the 70s and beyond, and doing them up right. Like, this is a beauty. This disc looks great. It comes with a nice slip case. And it's just beautiful. So I was really excited to get this one. This is a cult movie that I discovered, I think, through Danny Perry years and years ago. And it's just a great music and outlaw movie. And I'm a big fan. So Harder They Come is my last pick.
Very cool, man. Well, that's quite a stack of discs we both picked this month. And yeah, I mean, this is pretty awesome. I love doing the show with you. I can't believe that this marks a full year, 2019, a full year of discs.
Fantastic.
I can't remember at all what I picked in January. I can't even remember what I picked last month, and we just recorded that not too long ago. But it's a lot of fun, and I'm so glad that people that listen to your other shows like this one as much as they do, and same for the Shockwaves gang. And, you know, it's an end of the year. You know, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays, whatever you celebrate. We really appreciate you listening to our ramblings. It makes it all worthwhile.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, these are conversations that you and I would have off mic.
Anyways, yeah.
But I like that we can record them and other people can listen and get some kind of enjoyment out of it. And I really appreciate you having been a part of the show for a full year now and beyond. Actually, we've just been doing this segment for a year, but you've been on the show long almost as long as it's been around.
Yeah.
You've been in and out of different episodes. So I appreciate your involvement. And, you know, you're the perfect guy to have on the show because you and I are just so like-minded in terms of our collector sensibilities and what we're into. And I just, yeah, like you, I really enjoy hearing what you're going to talk about every month that we do this. And everybody else seems to, too. So we're going to keep these going.
Yeah.
Happy holidays, as Rob said. Everybody have a wonderful and Blu-ray-filled holiday, and we will talk to you very soon. Bye-bye.